president of the department, led by the DG. I think by now we almost know each other.
But I see some two new faces here. Maybe the DG will just introduce his delegation so that we can know everybody. And also let me just indicate that the chairperson will join us late at around about 11. She's still on her flight to Cape Town. Thanks, DG.
Thank you, honorable members. Let me start by introducing the team. I have here all the DDGs and the chief directors, but I will start on my left, Linda Gali, chief director of legal services. And then Albimu Dise is chief director of communication. And myself, I'm the DG of the department. Mr. Mketeni, DDG Biodiversity and Conservation. And then Mr. Isam Abada, DDG Corporate Affairs. Joanne Yawich, DDG Environmental Quality and Protection. Alf Wills, DDG International Cooperation. And then next to him, Dr. Mayekiso, he is DDG Oceans Management. And next to him, I have Ms. Razina Omar. She is acting DDG Marine and Coastal Management, but Chief Director, Integrated Coastal Management. Next to her, I have Esther Magau, who is the Chief Financial Officer. And then I have another Chief Director there, Mr. Kojua Dumunzi, who is the Chief Director responsible for SRC. And Ms. Dr. Rudy Pretorius, who is a Director Information Management, who is going to be doing the presentation on the carbon footprint. And who else? Yeah, okay, I have then have Dimpo Makotokoto. She's the director in the office of the DG for business performance. And I have Kwanele Mashi. She's our parliamentary office. You can see we're expanding a little bit, honorable members. So after the split, from tourism. We did not get bigger. We had to replace. We lost some posts and some people, and we had to keep the level of functionality that is required by filling some of the posts, but not all, because we don't have all the money. Can I then get into the presentation, honorable chair?
Before that, DG, I think your delegation also need to know us as a member. Myself, I'm Masan Mepitos Matebe. I'm the whip and the acting chair for now. Sophia.
Thanks, Chair. My name is J.J. Kosan, deployed by the ANC, Member of Parliament.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Annette Lafmoy. I represent the Democratic Alliance on the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, DG, Chair and Acting Chair. My name is Gareth Morgan, representing the DA.
Good morning, DG. My name is Catherine Mabuza, representing the ANC.
Morning. I'm sorry, I can't. They call me Aunt Connie. Aunt Connie Zigalala, representative from the Inkatha Freedom Party.
Thank you, Mavir. Dizzy, you can.
Thank you, honorable members. The presentation that I will be making is just an overview of what is the basis for our strategic plan going forward as the Department of Environmental Affairs after the restructuring process. We also will get presentations from the DDGs then that outline the details that are linked to what we defined as priorities and what also informs road priority. And I have the overview of the presentation as outlined. Honourable members, next slide, please. I did not add in the presentation the 3-4 slides, but I will just talk to them. They are on the white screen. Firstly, the work of this department, we draw it from the Constitution in terms of Section 24B of the Constitution. And we are therefore entrusted with the right to an environment that is not harmful to the citizens of the country. And therefore, environment becomes a right, not a privilege, and we move from that basis. However, I think I must then also indicate that our budget, as I would also reflect on the last slide of the presentation later on, has not been growing in actual terms. In fact, we've had a cut of about 5%, which then means that we are unable to fulfill the obligations of the mandate that we are entrusted with. Be that as it may, the attempt then to do what we can do is what is going to be presented in the document. And it has been worse also after the split of the department, because we're losing about 1.5 billion to tourism. Of course, there was a huge amount, which about 600 million was, which was in any event transferred to SA Tourism. But part of the shared services and is partly what we had to lose during the split process. So I do want to appeal to members to understand that we might not be as ambitious as you might be expecting, but we'll try our best then to utilize, we've outlined what we would utilize the resources for. Next slide. We move from the premise of a problem statement and the key areas of concern that arise from the State of the Environment Report of 2007, which demonstrated that the conditions of the environment continue to deteriorate. It did not give us a conclusive confirmation, but it does give us enough evidence of a certain issue that I will talk to just now. One, South Africa ranks amongst the world's top 20 biggest greenhouse gas emitters, which is why it is important for us then to have a focus and play a particular active role in the area of climate change, including taking bold actions as a country. The issues that relate to the pollution of water, air quality that harm people's health, in a number of areas, they are reported of respiratory diseases that can be traced to poor air quality, and in some instances, waterborne diseases like cholera outbreaks have become a norm in our country. And those are not just about the poor management of water by the Department of Water Affairs. We have a bigger problem as a country in terms of making sure that the citizens understand what are the best practices in respect to managing resources, including the developers. Poor waste management and lack of access to waste services, including the issues of hazardous waste. You've heard in the media recently about illegal dumping of medical waste, mine dumps and leachates that arise from some of the mines, because the demarcated mine area at times is not the only place that gets affected by the pollution of the underground resources. It can be extended to further areas within a particular catchment. And we then also have learned from the same report that our fauna and flora is being exploited in an unsustainable manner, which therefore threatens the ecosystem functioning and may undermine social and economic development. And in respect to the ocean, we have up to 20 species that are being commercially harvested, and some of them that are available for recreational use purposes that are overexploited. And some, in some instances, they are approaching levels of collapse, and there are indications of migration of species which are linked to some of the either the warming or of the seawater. We have wetlands in the country which are destroyed or degraded, and the report pointed to about 50% of them being not in a good state. And these are very important systems in our environment that help to regulate water quality and water flow. And then the issue then that relate to the spread of alien invasive species. Next, I'm on the next slide. We have, as a department, been working on regulations to manage alien invasives in our country. However, I guess the implementation of programs to reverse the invasiveness of those species is not something that is realizable with the level of resources that that are available in terms of financing, including land management practices by both government or public and private sector. We have an indication that 40% growth, if that is what is still ideal for our economy, would then result in water requirements of about and that would then consequently result in water deficit of about 2 million cubic meters per annum by 2025. The issues then that relate to wastewater pollution and marine environment pollution and uncontrolled developments across or along our coastal areas. You might have seen again in the media last week that around the St. Lucia area or East Mangaliso, we have had to, with our public entity there, to actually demolish some of the illegal developments. And these are the issues that continue to confront us. The air quality in terms of household fire making is an area where we have continued to educate communities on how best can they minimize pollution that will then result in their health being compromised. So the next slide, honorable members, continue to then outline the issues that relate to why we then wanted to take particular actions which would be defined in the strategic plan. But over and above that, I think I want to point to the issue of mining activities that continue to compromise the environment and us being powerless as a department because that implementation of the amended legislation has not come into effect in terms of what was approved by Parliament a year or so ago. Next slide and next slide. Therefore, honourable members, I think in outlining and explaining then the functions of the department, we have the environmental quality and protection focus area, which is also a branch which seeks to improve the quality and safety of the environment, thereby reducing and preventing demands and cost to public health systems. And that program, the DDG, will then give you the key activities or the key focus areas that are linked to it and how we would measure those in respect of our strategic plan going forward. In the area of biodiversity and conservation, again, in this area, we seek to promote the conservation and sustainable use of natural resources in a manner that facilitates economic growth and poverty alleviation. So we have the health aspects, we have the economic aspects, and then the oceans and the coastal management focus a program that helps or that seeks to make the department make a contribution to protecting South African oceans and the coastal environment through proactive coastal planning and dealing with impacts proactively that could arise on the coastline. Then we then have a legislative framework that enables us to then implement action for compliance purposes. One, our umbrella legislation, which is NEMA, the National Environmental Management Act of 1998, is the overall regulatory framework for the management and protection of the environmental resources. And it also outlines coordination mechanisms amongst the three spheres of government and national departments which have impacting functions on the environment, like energy, mining or mineral resources, agriculture, and so on. We then have a subordinate legislation that then arises under NEMA, which is the Protected Areas Act of 2003, which seeks to regulate protected areas, a protected area network in South Africa, setting out the levels of protection. We have national protection, provincial protected areas, or even special nature reserves. And these then are protected areas that have to, or we try and strive to make sure that they are representative of the key biomes that make up our ecosystem. In respect to the Air Quality Management Act of 2004, it then regulates the air quality in terms of setting national standards or norms for acceptable air quality. Then in respect to the Biodiversity Act of 2004, it is then the law that sets out the mechanisms for managing and conserving South Africa's biodiversity, including its components and institutions, and it establishes SANBI, which is our South African National Biodiversity Institute. And the institute then, one of the key responsibilities is to advise the minister on the state of the South African biodiversity, and they also act as a scientific authority for CITES, which is the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. The Waste Act, which came into effect in 2000, which was promulgated in 2008 but came into effect in July 2009, regulates waste management and provides norms and standards for regulating the management of waste by all spheres of government, and provides for the licensing and the control of waste management activities like disposal and other issues. We then have the Integrated Coastal Management Act of 2008, which came into effect in December 2009, but with areas that have not come into effect in terms of it repealing the Seashore Act because of the issues that related to Transnet, as discussed by the previous committee in the past, and that matter would be coming back to this committee for consideration. If the committee approves, then the amendment of the Act, or not an amendment of the Act. But DPE has taken an issue with us in regard to that. And in the interest of cooperative governance, then the President was requested or was decided to approve then the coming into effect of some of the sections of the Integrated Coastal Management Act. But this is a law that establishes a system of integrated coastal management and estuarine management in the Republic. It ensures the development and use of natural resources within the coastal zone in an economically justifiable and sustainable manner, and it determines the responsibilities of the various organs of state, in respect of the various coastal areas that are defined, and it controls or it defines the control on dumping at sea and the pollution in the coastal zone. So this is a legislation that therefore in a sense also facilitates controlled planning in the coastal zone. It has got limited linkage with the fishery function as per the transfer process to agriculture. Honourable members, then our strategic plan would then have a vision which we have not changed from the last strategic plan that we presented last year: a prosperous and equitable society living in harmony with its natural resources. And it outlines the values that guide us as an organization, and we have not changed that. And then the programs of the department are still six programs, which we have six programs, but program three used to be marine and coastal management. Now we have changed it to oceans and coastal management, and this is what has been also approved in the national expenditure estimates by the National Treasurer. Then in respect of the goals, we have still have the same number of goals. We have goal one to goal five, and in the next page, in the next slide, the goals then are linked to strategic objectives. In delivering on our mandate, we seek to protect and conserve and enhance our environment and natural heritage assets and resources. We proactively plan, manage and prevent pollution and environmental degradation to ensure a sustainable and healthy environment in line with the problem statement. We seek to provide leadership on climate change, adaptation and mitigation, and to contribute to sustainable development, livelihood, green and inclusive economic growth through facilitating skills development and employment creation. We hope to create a better Africa or contribute to a better world by advancing our national environmental interests in the global arena. And then the next slide again reflects what the strategic objectives are in respect to goals that relate to the learning organization. We want to position our department as an employer of choice, and that we can say that whenever we have positions that we advertise, there is quite a steep competition for people that are, or officials that work in other government departments who want to come and work for the department. And I think we are beginning to attract even people from private sector in some instances. For operational efficiency, we want to enhance service delivery and to continue to improve our systems. Around financial responsibility, we want to promote sound corporate and cooperative governance, and on empowerment, we want to enhance our reputation and collective ownership of this sector. The link then, the presidency has set out a framework for monitoring and evaluation, and honourable members, we do have a document, but that document is still not quite made public. It was still a draft that we got from the presidency. And in this document, we have managed to get at least the environmental outcome in, and it's outcome number 10, and therefore we think we then stay in the radar screen of the priorities of government. So this slide then demonstrates the alignment with the M&E outcomes framework and in respect to what we've identified as our priorities. We, on the right side, we outline what our priorities are for that of protection, proactive planning, and providing leadership. And then on outcome four, which is decent employment through inclusive economic growth, we contribute to sustainable development and livelihoods opportunities, and we have a program on skills development. We have an employment creation program through the social responsibility program, or our contribution through the expanded public works program. And then on the international front, in respect of outcome 11, again here we seek to advance our national environmental interests and through the Global Sustainable Development Agenda. Linking to the MTSF, which is the medium-term strategic framework of government, again, there is an MTSF priority 12, which talks to sustainable natural resources. And we have then outlined our role in speeding up growth and transformation of the economy. We seek then to facilitate development paths that will foster green economic growth, and that is linked to climate change core benefits. In respect to massive program to build social and economic infrastructure, we continue to up our work in terms of improved environmental impact assessment processes. And on rural development and food security, our interest in this case and the role is more related to the work of the resolution of land claims in protected areas and post-settlement support, and subsistence fisheries is no longer going to be reflected in our strategic plan. On education, we provide environmental education and skills development for the sector through our work with provinces, and when Mr. Mudise presents later on, you will see how we plan to do that. And on health, again, effective air quality management and effective waste management, that linkage with the work that we do. Fight against crime, issues of environmental crimes, whether it's rhino poaching, land contamination, or illegal dumping of hazardous waste. We hope to work in an integrated approach to prevention of those illegal activities and to improve compliance with environmental laws. We're working with the Department of Justice and Police, and the Minister of Justice has now approved that we have a regional court, KZN Regional Court, Gauteng Regional Court, and the Western Cape Regional Court as courts that would give more time for environmental cases to be processed, and the Free State District Court would then also be one of the pilots that we will undertake with the Department of Justice, and this is supposed to be effective from the beginning of May this year. And cohesive and sustainable communities, again here our local government support programs through the EPWP on open space management, that's more our focus now going forward, wetland rehabilitation, street cleaning and coastal cleanups is going to be the main areas of work in terms of our expanded public works intervention. Sustainable resource management and use. Again, here working with Treasury, as you also had the Minister of Finance budget in his budget speech indicating the initiative of implementing carbon tax, and in that we would continue to work with Treasury in terms of other user charges that would at least bring in money into the fiscus, but also help us to get compliance by various industries, but also government and society. On the creating a better world, the Global Sustainable Development Agenda, climate change and transfrontier conservation program are still on our radar screen. And in the area of the developmental state, including improvement of services, we hope to do our part in ensuring that there is sector monitoring and evaluation capacity. We are going to be having a workshop with the provinces on Thursday and Friday to work out and define the delivery forum for monitoring the effectiveness of the implementation to achieve the outcome on environmental protection. On the financial resources, honorable members, as you can see, we have the budget, our baseline, 3.8 billion and growing to 4.1 and 4.3 billion. And we had additional funds of 88 million, 111 million to 216 million. But those, I mean, it was more on to help us with our baseline for compensation of employees. In the previous strategic plan, honorable members, I did report that after the department had undergone a institutional review to actually up its capacity and set our capacity on enforcement and compliance in order to give effect to the implementation of the various pieces of legislation that have just gone through Parliament in the past 3 years, we have not received enough money to actually fund that establishment. And we made a case to Treasury for additional funds, and we still got 19 million reflected there. And then the expanded public works 65 million, and the 4 million is for the preparations for climate change. We're hosting the Conference of the Parties in 2011 in South Africa, and the preparatory work has to start this year. So at least that's what is provided for. But that amounts to 0.004%. We were hoping to get, for us to get at least our establishment funded in order for us to have an ability to undertake the operations that we planned for, both from the previous strategic plan. We needed at least a 2:1 allocation, which is at least double what we have been provided for here. And we have not been given able to get 1% as an increase. Over and above that, the cost saving cuts way above then the amount that we received of 0.04. We had to cut about 5%. So in essence, there is no real increase in our baseline. And over and above that, you can see tourism transfer, function transfer, the 1.115 billion rand, and in essence, as a department, we remain with 2.6 billion. And out of that 2.6 billion, that includes our transfers to our public entities, which is about 23%. 596 million is going to our public entities, then parks, Sandbees, weather services, and Isimangaliso. So the department then gets left with about a billion rand to implement, and that is far from enough in terms of our ability to undertake the function. The last slide then just outlines the challenges in terms of resourcing the department and the fact that there is decrease in donor funding from the global economy climate, which all members are aware of. We have a constrained financial environment currently, so we cannot count on that either. And we have to then reprioritize and find ways of funding what matters the most in terms of our strategic plan currently. So we are still going to pursue the matter with National Treasury, because even now our establishment is 10% shortfall, more or less. So we can't fill all the posts that would make us functional. Thank you very much, honorable members. And the next presenter is Joanne.
Thank you, DG. Before Joanne will come in, remember we have 9 presenters. So I'm proposing that we take at least 5 and we allow for questions and clarifications and discussions. Then thereafter, we can take the remaining 4. Agreed?
Yes.
Thanks. Joanne?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and morning, Honourable Members. The presentation that I've got is quite long and quite detailed, and so what I'm going to do is to go over the high-level issues and then want to suggest that the detail of the actual strategic plan we're going to leave for now, and then we will come back to it. I think certainly in the workshops we'll look in much more detail. But just to give you an overall view of the priorities and some of the issues around it. Okay, and before we go into it, we're talking about 4 chief directorates, environmental impact management, regulatory services, which is the environmental law enforcement function, air quality management, and then waste management. So those are the four areas I'm going to deal with. Okay, in terms of environmental impact management, there are three high-level areas of focus that we are going to continue with over the period. The first is the regulatory function, which is essentially about the efficient and effective delivery on EIA. So it's essentially running an EIA processing machine. I think that the challenge, and we'll come on to challenges a bit more at the end, is that we are, at the moment, in the last year, have got in double the amount of EIAs that we had planned for. So in other words, we're doing double the work, but we don't have double the people or double the money. Then under systems and tools development, it's something that we've dealt with Parliament extensively, is the process into the long term of rationalizing the environmental impact management system and introducing new tools. And the first area under that is the issue of the EIM strategy, which is all of the different pieces of work that make up the implementation of the amended NEMA Chapter 5, including the establishment of an integrated authorization system. All of the strategic tools and mechanisms that have been put in there now need to be implemented. Then there's the area of information management that falls under that, and firstly there's the National Environmental Authorization System, which is the EIA database that we are working on with the provinces, and that work will continue during the course of this year. And then there's a whole lot of work around GIS, around the spatial mapping and the development of spatial decision support and spatial information around environmental impact management. And lastly, there's the ongoing law reform process. The EIA regulations under NEMA Chapter 5 are about to be promulgated quite soon, and then there is a process beyond that, including the development of new regulatory tools. And then the third area is under capacity and awareness. Last year and the year before, we did quite a substantial capacity audit of the ability of within government around the country of our capacity to implement the EIM system, and that then arose to develop a capacity action plan that's been put in place, and that's got to be implemented. We're then putting in place a whole set of strategic tools, including environmental frameworks and guidelines. And the last slide, slide in this presentation is a slide of where we are in terms of the development of environmental management frameworks around the country. So we'll look at that at the end. And then there is a very big issue, and I mean it's an issue we've discussed a lot in this committee, which is that we have a very big challenge in that you've got a situation where we need to look at how we're going to build the capacity of communities to engage with the EIA process. Often we sit in a situation at the moment where it's only relatively well-resourced communities that have an ability to engage effectively. So we want to do a whole lot of work around that, about how you actually support communities in engaging. And then the other area of difficulty that we have at the moment is the EIA industry is an expensive industry. And when you're getting people wanting to start businesses that require EIAs, but they themselves are struggling for capital, getting an EIA done in the first place, again, mobilizing the resources to do an EIA is a difficult thing and can be a barrier, in fact, to entry into the system. So we're looking at some kind of a system of pro bono work in particular situations, working with the industry so that people for a minimal or no cost can actually get EIAs done. And that would be for relatively small developments, because clearly if you're mobilizing millions in capital, you've got the ability to pay for an EIA, but where it's a small individual enterprise, you often can't. Okay. Then linked to this is the work that we're going to do that will link into the presidential into the outcome system, the 10 outcomes, and that is the need for us to refine the baseline and indicators that we've got in order to be able to measure the impacts of EIAs, and we'll unroll that over the next few years. and then we're going to refine the work that we're doing in alignment with, again, with those presidential outcomes, and that is in particular to look at how the EMFs that we do and the guidelines that we do are integrated into municipal IDPs and into the spatial development frameworks that the provinces do, and developing a set of indicators for this that include waste and air quality plans and building the information system. So in relation to a new outcomes-based approach in government, it's essentially an evidence-based approach, and so there's work to be done to be able to demonstrate that evidence over time. Okay, then I'm going to skip the next three slides, which is the detail of how that would be reflected in the strategic plan, and we can come back to that. On regulatory services, the key priority, I think the DG has already referred to the one, which is the establishment of dedicated environmental, it's a dedicated time for environmental crimes in the courts, and then the rollout of EMI training and designation of EMIs in water affairs. There was an amendment to the legislation last year that allowed for water affairs officials to become environmental management inspectors, as well as to local government. And the process around local government has already begun in a fairly limited way. It's a very important issue with the transfer of the air quality licensing function to municipalities. It's quite important that municipalities in time should actually be able to enforce and ensure that the air quality, that they can enforce contraventions related to air quality and also related to waste management. Then what we call in compliance and enforcement blitz. I mean, we are basically, it's a big area of work because it's about proactive enforcement functions, really bringing together the provinces, municipalities, and national government to do law enforcement actions around particular sectors or in particular areas. So it's a priority because it is a large, in terms of time and resources and preparation, it's a very major area of work. And then lastly, we are going to establish, or are in the process of establishing, a waste task team to focus on waste-related compliance and enforcement. And we all know about the kinds of problems that we're facing around healthcare risk waste. I mean, it's a much deeper problem than simply a compliance problem. But we are wanting to focus on the healthcare risk waste compliance. I'm going to then skip the next slide and go on to air quality management. On the priorities, there's the continued development and operation of the South African Air Quality Information System, and especially the National Atmospheric Emissions Inventory, including the greenhouse gas inventory. And what is going to be happening over the next year is that is going to, over time, be transferred to weather services. And so that's a key area of work, is to ensure we do have a reliable national information base around air quality. Then there is the rollout of the new Air Quality Act regulatory tools and guidance. And the guidance is particularly important because the municipalities take over the licensing. There's been a lot of preparatory work done over the last 2 or 3 years. But once that happens, there's going to be a lot of work for us. Our function, instead of a licensing function, is going to be the function of support to the new licensing authority. And in order to do that, we've already established a whole lot of systems and tools and means of achieving that, but that's something that is going to need to continually be updated and supported. So those are our key priorities there. Let's go then on to pollution and waste management. The headline priorities. Can you go forward? Sorry. Go back to the next one? Yeah. No? Back one? Go to the headline priorities. Okay. On waste, the headline priorities is firstly to do work around the waste balance status quo determination. That's a very fancy way of saying that we need to carry on doing the work to understand where the waste is and how much of it there is and what's the mixture. is. Now, I mean, that sounds a very simple thing to say, but we're starting from first base in the sense that there's been very little historically. There isn't an infrastructure to actually measure waste around the country. We have passed, are in the process of passing regulations around a waste information system, but to make it real is a big challenge. Then we provide support to the National Cleaning and Greening Program, which is something that we will talk about just now when we talk about the SRPP. The role of our branch is to provide technical support for the implementation of programs that the SRPP runs. Then we are doing work to develop a labor-intensive service delivery model for waste collection. We've been doing a pilot in the Northwest, and there needs to be work done to identify the lessons from that and then to be able to look at how one could build a set of options. Then we wanted to work around the development of courses and training of municipal landfill site managers and waste management officers. What we have discovered is a lot of the problems in the bad landfill management in the country is simply that the landfill managers who are running these sites do not actually have the training to do the job properly. And so there's a large task to be done in order to be able to train and systematize and to be able to build that capacity. Then there's something here that I know has been discussed in this committee in previous years, which is that we want to embark on a public-private partnership process, a feasibility study with Treasury around a regional healthcare risk waste treatment plant. And the reality is that we have some short and maybe a couple of medium-term solutions to the dumping of medical waste, but we do not have any long-term solutions. There's a very big problem in the country. There are huge challenges around this, and we would want to see whether if we couldn't go into a partnership between government and the private sector around big and state-of-the-art facilities, whether into the long term you couldn't deal with some of the difficulties that we're having. So it's a 2-3-year process, and at the moment it isn't resourced either, but we think that it's something that really needs to be looked at. Then we are doing work around, and we'll continue to do work around, increased funding of waste services. And we're looking at an aid memoir with municipalities around waste services tariffs, trying to get some kind of evenness into the system around how tariffs are set and for what level of service, what should be charged. In other words, doing some kind of benchmarking. And we've also been engaging with Treasury and through the social cluster, looking at the fact that the funding for waste infrastructure and waste services is seriously inadequate across the country. Then we're launching a waste management officers forum. It's not a simple event. I mean, there's a very long process that is leading up to that. And then we're looking at a review of the recycling target with the paper and package industry, almost as a starting point for the rollout of doing that sector by sector in relation to the Waste Act. But the first one we're doing is with the paper and packaging industry. There's a long set of challenges. I'm not certain. I don't think I'm going to go through it. There's just one thing that I do. I'm sure it's going to come up, so I might as well mention it, which is that the legislative changes around mining that were embodied in the NEMA amendments have not yet come into effect. The countdown hasn't started because the MPRDA Act, which was passed in Parliament last year, hasn't been brought into effect. And so I know I'm sure people are going to ask questions about mining, but just to say that we sit in exactly the same position as we did a year ago, which is that we do not have a legislative function in relation to mining, and there is no indication when we will. So I think we can talk about it in questions, but just to say that I think that that is something that we need to resolve. More broadly, we have a very serious capacity problem, not only at a national level, but also in the provinces and municipalities. The DG has spoken about the department's financial situation and the fact that we are underfunded. we are in a situation where the work that we are doing, the volumes are growing all the time and the need is growing, but the money is not. So I think that really that means we're having to focus quite narrowly in order to be able to get the best, I suppose, the best bang for our buck. But the reality is that we are quite tightly constrained right across the country. So I think that really I don't think we need to go into any more of that detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade Joanne. Oh, you know, I used to be with the during the strike, but I was here called Comrade Joanne.
Let me take this opportunity and welcome the chairperson of this committee. We have just joined up here. Most welcome, Comrade Chairperson. So I'm still warming the chair for her. We'll just continue. Pundit.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Acting Chair. Morning, Chairperson, Honorable Members. It's good to be here today with the DG next to me. Honorable Members, I'll be presenting the program Biodiversity and Conservation. Next slide. There are some of the drivers that the DG alluded to that we need to respond to, as we cannot leave them unabated. I think DG has spoken to most of them. Next slide. Even the use of alien invasives, levels of utilization. The last one is more on regional integration. I think we acknowledge the fact that the ecosystems are borderless. There are problems that we're experiencing coming from outside our borders. Therefore, we need also to look at that area as a challenge. Next slide. There are four columns on my slides. On top, you'll see these are the key outputs as outlined in the MNE document of presidency. Therefore, we've already aligned our responses to that MNE document. And then below that, you'll see we are talking to the strategic objective or the priority of the department that the DG has spoken about. First column is a KPA, second column KPI. I will talk more in the middle column, which are our targets for the next financial year. The last column is for information. That's where we would like to be in 5 years' time. First one, on the utilization, we would like to have at least two systems to enhance coordination around CITES implementation. We would like to have a proper reporting system and also a proper permitting system. We have developed regulations for CITES. People are complying now with the convention. We want to ensure 40% of the CITES provisions are implemented. We have developed jobs in the last 2 years that we have been implementing with provinces. We experienced some challenges there. But we would like to make sure that in the next year we look at some of our amendments, given our experiences in implementation. We would like to intervene in at least two provinces, especially Limpopo province and the northwest or Mpumalanga. Therefore, on that one, we would like to make sure that we assist provinces. We cannot sit back and keep on saying it's their money. Therefore, we want to do those two. On bioprospecting, there are applications that are coming through. We are continuing to make sure that we assess them speedily. We want to see 90% of those assessed. We want to develop a guideline to negotiate the benefit-sharing agreements, because at this stage we do have regulations. We are realizing that between the owner of the genetic resource and the applicant, there's no proper guideline. Therefore, we want to have a guideline. Next slide. Oh, DG is questioning me on acronyms, Honorable Member. I will. DOPS is a threatened or threatened species list. CITES is a convention in the international trade in endangered species. We have a national biodiversity framework. We would like to make sure 40% of that framework is implemented. It is the framework that's guiding biodiversity planning, which most of the departments that are impacting on biodiversity need to look at. Therefore, we want to make sure that it is implemented. We developed in the last year bioregional guidelines. We want to make sure that 90% of the plans are submitted by provinces and local municipalities for approval and evaluation. And also we want to draft a list of threatened river ecosystems. We have done with the terrestrial ecosystems. Now we want to move to the river ecosystems that are currently threatened. There's a new KPI there, which is highlighted in red, around developing an SCA. It's a strategic environmental assessment, or an EMF that are led by Joanne's team, environmental management framework. So, therefore, in the middle, they want to have at least one SCA for a threatened area or region initiated. What's that to our mind is the whole issue around Mapungubwe. I think in Mapungubwe we're facing a problem because we don't have an SCA. Therefore, we might start there in the new year to have a proper plan, hoping that the pressure from mining will be, we can wait for a year until we develop a proper plan. We want to have one additional stewardship program implemented. Currently, we have two, one in KZN and one in Western Cape. Therefore, one has an additional one more. As the land ownership moves to the new owners, we would like to have two land reform sites incorporated as part of stewardship. But stewardship is one of the ways of conserving that biodiversity under private land ownership. Next one. Early invasive species, we've been coming a long way with this one. The regulations are ready. The only challenge now is to develop maps. We are busy engaging the industry with regard to developing maps. We hope by May we'll have maps ready, because we've been waiting to implement, or we can remove that chapter that talks to maps, but we won't have a complete product. Therefore, we're hoping that maps will be finalized so that we can be in full swing with implementation. We want to have a plan that will be used by the provinces. There's an issue of GMOs, which is managed by agriculture. We are commenting on received GMO applications. We are looking there on impacts to biodiversity. Thank you, Chief. Apologies. It's a genetically modified organism that we are dealing with. Most people are putting applications to agriculture for those genetically modified organisms to be approved for use, especially for food security. Therefore, we do look at possible threats to biodiversity. Therefore, we normally assess them as they come. Another issue is around biological it is around the introduction of biological control agents to the environment. Because when we control some of the threats, you need to use certain species that might be coming outside the country. We have a lot of those requests, especially from agriculture. Therefore, we want to make sure that those applications for biological control agents are assessed by us. We want to develop a risk assessment framework for the alien invasive species that we referred to above. And also, there's an issue of mining. We want to have a guideline for the best practice so that we don't have to fight with the mining industry around what needs to be done. They will want to agree on a guideline up front. With regard to species management, we are approving species management plans. We would like to have two more species this year having plans in place. Next slide. On land degradation, it's an issue that affects agriculture, rural development, and us as a department. Therefore, we do have areas of concern that we want to make sure that the ecosystems are not degraded. Therefore, we want to make sure at least 700 hectares of land of affected ecosystems is rehabilitated. Again, the actual implementation will be happening more through our SRPP program that we have in the department. We also want to have partnerships for intervention on those in the degraded ecosystems. We do have wetlands in the country. Therefore, we want to have an inventory classification system which is internationally recognized for our own wetlands. Three management plans for Ramsar site developed. 75 wetlands rehabilitated. The results are that in the Working for Water program, about 50 are implemented each year. Therefore, while that target looks huge, but it is achievable. We are looking at 75. Next slide.
It's
saying
35
wetlands. Yes, rehabilitated.
It's over 5 years.
Now, I said the last column is where we would like to be in 5 years. That's why, honorable members, if you can concentrate in the middle column. Thank you, honorable members. Next slide. Under the conservation estate, we are currently at 6.5%. By next year, we want to have 7% of land under conservation and one World Heritage Site nominated. Perhaps it will be the same site, the Fred Default Dome, that we're battling to agree with the landowners. I hope on Saturday I'm going there to meet them again. I hope we'll be able to have a deal. That's why we're putting only one for next year and also for the proclamation. Next one. Under environmental education, of which LB will talk more to that, this is International Year of Biodiversity, the IYB. We have developed a program to create awareness and the hype among the citizens about the year. It's a global activity for the year. One, we do have that program. We also want to continue with our People and Parks program, Kids and Parks program, and also making a case for biodiversity. The whole talk around ecosystem services, we feel, is not yet understood. Therefore, we would like this year to develop a simple case for people to understand what is this whole issue around biodiversity. We are developing a model for rationalization of our protected area system because, as we speak, we are fragmented. We are not achieving the economies of scale. Our protected areas are not effectively managed. Therefore, by end of March, we'll be having some options that the department needs to sell out there. Therefore, we want to have a mechanism facilitating a decision on those models because it's not going to be an easy process. Next slide. I think the first call is a repeat of the same. On the status quo and around the greening, I think Joanne alluded to it, driven by OSRPP. In our case, we want to work with municipalities because we realize that there are ecosystems, river ecosystems, terrestrial ecosystems that are within the cities and municipalities, which are biodiversity hotspots. Therefore, we realize that we need to assist municipality with designs in order to conserve those ecosystems. We want to look at open spaces so that we can green those open spaces to enhance water quality, water flow, and the integrity of those ecosystems. Therefore, we'll be working with our SRPP and municipalities to implement those. We also want to have a reporting mechanism on the co-management framework. We do have a framework, but we would like now entities to be able to report on how the framework is implemented, framework guiding the relationship between parks authorities and the communities. Next slide.
Yes.
Social responsibility, the expanded populace program. Thank you very much. One wildlife corridor for matters of resource species established. We want to also have a draft conservation strategy for our TSAs. I think for the last Trans-Frontier Conservation Area members. Thank you very much. Trans-Frontier Conservation Area, our cross-border conservation area. And also 10% of the projects that on the investment catalog. We developed a catalog that was showing opportunities in cross-border parks. That catalog came up to 51 opportunities. In the last year, 3 have been taken by investors, which is what, 10% of the 51. We want also to continue in the new financial year to with the same 10% so that we can make sure there's proper investment in cross-border parks. Next slide. The Boundless brand is still within our department, but we might in future make sure that we work close with our tourism counterparts to look at that. We want to have one access facility established this year. In your slide, Honorable, you'll see 5. I think they were put cumulatively, but now we're talking about the year. But we have 4 already that are in place. We want to have another one in this financial year. Next slide. We are developing a protected area effectiveness system. We want to make sure that now we develop norms and standards for performance indicators for in the new year. We want to have 4 management plans for the World Heritage Sites approved. On the rhino poaching, we at last going to have a national wildlife reaction unit to deal with high priority crime. Environmental crime. For now, the focus will be more on rhino poaching. But the more we might have elephants next. Next one will be other plant species of high biodiversity value. We will establish also an enforcement unit. We'll have a plan in place this year in order to complement what is stated above there. Next slide. Framework for response strategy on climate change finalized. And then we want also to contribute to the vulnerability assessment for key biodiversity hotspots. We want to cost that response. Next slide. On research, 10% bio-research research program implemented. We are working with DST, Department of Science and Technology on that one. And also the certification driving research programs that we are currently working with most of the universities. And also to implement the LFN research program. We do have the structure in place. We have prioritized research areas. Therefore, we have already called for submissions from institutions to deal with that. Next slide. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Mtegel. Honorable DG. I'm very much disappointed because as members there we said it many a times that we must at least try to avoid abbreviation, say things in full so that members can grasp them. But 90% of Mr. Mtegene's presentation deals only with abbreviation. So I wonder whether we have went through this document before coming here so that we have rectified all these things. I mean, it's not nice to interrupt the presenter to say, what does this mean? Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure that DG, you are aware that in April we'll be debating this presentation. I don't think that is fair to members of parliament. And therefore, I would like you and Mr. Yeah, before you leave today, Sifumane Zonke, as I know in full, what is meant by that? It's very unfair to this committee. Very, very much unfair. Because every time you come and make presentations, we say the same thing over and over and over again. And at the end, Mani Pumaba and anybody members of the parliament is stupid. Because it will say we are stupid. Because we don't understand this thing. Even a person who's not a member of this committee can ask one of us here, what is meant by this? Even the chairperson. And the person will sound very stupid. So before
before you leave today, can you just assist us so that we can get that thing before we leave here? Because we have to wait the next month, this very same thing that we're talking about here. Otherwise, we won't waste anything in environment. I don't think that it's happy when you don't say anything about environment and just talk about water. It won't be nice because that will affect your budget. Please, DG. Thanks.
We apologize, all our members. I think Fundi made it was an oversight. In the actual document, because we'll still give you a word document, we explain these terms, even in the old strategy, because they are long to put in a table. But I think we will just supply you with the ones that they use today. But we all have all the applications written up front in the strategy plan. My apologies.
Yes, please. Yeah, Chairman, I think that I've got the very same concern that our Chairman has now. Because even this document, when the presenter was speaking to the document, it's only a summary which reflects in the document. Most of the things were said by him, by his mouth, and of which are not within the document. I know you cannot put everything, but just this summary, to some extent, of some other issues, really, if you read it alone, you cannot grasp it as he was presenting. I should think he must try a little bit to elaborate on some certain issues. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Mr.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
I was not referring to her hair when I said what I wanted to tell you. Thank you, sir.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Acting Chair, and Honourable Members, good morning. Next slide, please. Thanks. I'm going to do the presentation on the new focus area for the department, which is to provide leadership on climate change adaptation and mitigation. The KPA stands for Key Performance Area, and the KPI stands for Key Performance Indicator. Okay. The first key priority that we have for this coming financial year is to develop the national policy framework for climate change, and this involves the publication and the development and publication of the white paper. First a green paper, then a white paper. Next slide, please. Under the strategic objective of providing leadership on climate change, the key priority that we have is to implement the mitigation or the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. In this regard, we, using the Air Quality Act, we want to identify greenhouse gases as declared and declare them as priority pollutants. We need to set up, in order to be able to do that, a greenhouse gas monitoring and reporting system, and we need to publish sector mitigation action guidelines in respect of the energy sector, the transport sector, the industrial sector, and the LULUCF stands for land use change and forestry sector, and the waste sector. We would like mitigation monitoring and reporting and verification system in place. Next slide, please. With respect to the adaptation, the issue of responding and adapting to climate change impacts, we'd like to develop a biodiversity response strategy. In the last strategic plan, we had a national climate change adaptation response policy, but this is going to be collapsed into the national policy framework. So you don't want to develop two separate policies, one for mitigation, one for adaptation. We just want to put it in one. So that one is coming out. And then we have in respect of adaptation, we want six priority adaptation sector plans developed in the agriculture sector, the health sector, the water sector, human settlement sector, and the land and tourism sectors. We need to scope out, some work to scope out and determine South Africa's adaptive capacity and what our key vulnerabilities are, as well as the costing of those actions to adapt versus the costing of not acting at all. And Monde will talk to this perhaps a bit in more detail, looking at the oceans and coast response strategy developed. Next slide, please. With regard to the international negotiation process, here we have a key performance area of effectively managing the department's international relations and engagements, specifically with respect to climate change. We have a key performance indicator where we define we set up key objectives for each international negotiating session, and we evaluate our success by the percentage of or the number of those objectives which we manage to negotiate, prepare for, and get incorporated in multilateral agreements, and similarly in the Africa, our bilateral agreements, South-South and South-North agreements. Next slide, please. As honourable members know, we are going to be hosting the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change conference in 2011, December 2011, in parallel with that, also the meeting of parties of the Kyoto Protocol at the same time. So the preparatory work that is required this next financial year is largely around the planning of that event, securing venues and negotiating a host country agreement, setting up interdepartmental logistics and as well as the substantive content committees, and putting in place project management capacity. The key challenges, in essence, I think some honourable members were in Copenhagen in December, the negotiations continue. We did not secure a multilateral agreement in Copenhagen, those negotiations continue until Mexico at the end of this year and beyond, which is South Africa in the next year. We have a key challenge to develop a national climate change response policy. The hosting of the conference, climate change conference in 2011, and setting up a greenhouse gas monitoring and reporting system. Next slide. With regard to the capacity to actually deliver on these targets, we have a formal establishment challenge to formally establish a new branch on climate change, and we need to obviously manage the human resource transitional arrangements around that. And in parallel, we still need to be setting up our systems, greenhouse gas inventory systems, our measurement, reporting, and verification systems. Next slide, please. In setting up this branch, we do have a challenge of attracting skills. The climate change sector is a new sector, and specialist skills are not really done. We need a comprehensive and coherent strategy to deliver on this mandate, and we need to set up the interdepartmental and interministerial, intergovernmental coordinating structures in order to achieve this. And obviously, in association with all of these challenges goes the issue of money. Next slide, please. We have aligned this strategic plan with the presidential outcomes. It clearly links up to outcome 10, which is to protect and enhance our environmental assets and natural resources. But it does also impinge on many other presidential outcome priorities, which are listed there. I'm not going to go through them. Thank you.
Last time we'll be taking the last one before we go to discussion. To some education.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Good morning, Chair, as well as honorable members. I will be talking to you this morning about what is planned in terms of an ocean strategy for the country. Next slide, please. I show that slide to illustrate that the Southern Hemisphere in general has a larger surface area of ocean than the Northern Hemisphere, and therefore oceans are more important to us than in the Northern Hemisphere. In addition, South Africa is a maritime nation, and we are saying that because it is in a position where it serves as a gateway to the Southern Ocean as well as to the Antarctica. South Africa is influenced in the east by the Indian Ocean, in the west by the Atlantic Ocean, and in the south by the Southern Ocean. And we are special in that sense. Not too many countries are exposed to influences of three oceans at the same time. South Africa uses the ocean for commercial purposes, for recreational purposes. We do subsistence as well as aquaculture. South Africa, Chair, has educational institutions. It has got research institutions and industrial capacity that enables it to participate in matters of the ocean. South Africa has also acceded to the United Nations Convention of the Law of the Sea and other international instruments. I'm mentioning this one, Chair, because it is what sometimes called the Bible of the Ocean. Next. That slide we are showing, Chair, to illustrate that South Africa landmass is a state in a vast ocean. If you look at that slide, South Africa there looks tiny, but both on left, right, and in the south is based by the oceans that I referred to earlier. So it is very much under the influence of the ocean. Next. Chair, South Africa has a very extensive, exclusive economic zone, which is largely unexplored. We now estimate that the surface area of ocean that South Africa owns exceeds the landmass or the surface area of the land that South Africa has. It has got more ocean than it has got land. We have an economic exclusion zone before you, economic exclusive zone around the landmass, in other words, around the continent, continental South Africa. But South Africa also has ownership of two islands in the Southern Ocean. Those are Prince Edward Island and Marion. And therefore, the 200-mile zone around those islands is also South African territory. We briefly stated the role of the Department of Environment Affairs, say that it is a custodian of the air, environment, water, biodiversity, coastal space, as well as ocean space. We think, therefore, that qualifies this department to be a lead agent in coordinating development of an ocean strategy for the country. Problem statement, Chair, next. Problem statement is that in South Africa, there is no collective national interest and strategy that has been defined. And we have a relatively untapped national opportunity for job and wealth creation. There is very, very poor coordination of effort. What we mean there, Chair, is that there are a number of agents or entities that are involved in ocean work. The Navy is involved in ocean work. The geoscience is involved in ocean work. Science and technology, Department of Transport, Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, all those organizations do some ocean work, but they are doing it independently of each other. There's little coordination amongst these structures. Next. What then is required? We think that what is required is that a vision is developed for the country. An ocean vision is developed, and after that, then a strategy gets developed so that people of South Africa can realize the total value of the ocean space. What we've done, Chair, next is to look at what other countries in the world have done. We've looked at what Australia has done, and they did publish their own paper or their own strategy in 1998, China in 1998, Norway 2002, Canada 2002, Brazil 2005, Portugal 2007, United Kingdom 2007. What then I've done, Chair, is to take the British one, the United Kingdom one, and say what are those things that they look under the various chapters. So what is here is not what is being suggested for South Africa, but what the British have done, and to give an indication of the kinds of things South Africa could look at. Under introduction, they deal with why does it matter that we should have an ocean strategy? Secondly, what needs to be changed from the way we're doing things? What needs to be done? Geographic space, what area should this ocean strategy cover? That's what they have under their introduction. Then, under their second chapter, they have issues around integration between land and sea. What are the issues that are important to that interface between the land and the sea? Then they deal with environmental data and information. It's where they suggest that we need to have quality data for decision making. Once we've got the data, this is converted, of course, into information for planning over a range of time scales. And then we give an example of what kind of information would be useful. For an example, valuing and discounting over time the opportunity cost of selecting one form of ocean use over another. What do we mean by that? For instance, we would need to make a decision whether a certain ocean space should rather be used as a marine protected area or it should be used for mining. The information that is collected enables the government to make a decision. So we think this is an important chapter. Then the fourth chapter, also very important, is planning in the marine environment. So what the British are proposing to do is to create a strategic marine planning system. And then, first of all, they look at human activities and infrastructure. Aquaculture is one of the issues. Bioprospecting is one of the issues. Dredging of the ocean environment is an issue. And fisheries is also an issue. Secondly, next slide. Yes, that's your question. Also under planning in the environment and similarly under creating a strategic marine planning system, they also look at natural resources, features and processes. What are the issues that they look at? Biodiversity, climate change, ecological and physical chemical processes, marine conservation areas. You would note here we call them marine protected areas because we took this from the British, we call them marine conservation areas. Okay, the next chapter would deal with licensing activities. For an example, how is gas exploration and so on licensed, or oil and gas exploration, minerals, and how would permission be given to carbon capture and storage. Then another chapter covers conservation issues, Chair, and another chapter covers institutional structures that would be used to achieve the objective. Next slide, please. Conclusion. We think that once we've got an ocean strategy, we'll be able to realize opportunities that are in the ocean space, as well as ensuring sustainability, such that the oceans are able to provide goods and services to the nation. For instance, in terms of weather, climate, coastal development, and agriculture. In terms of transport, for an example, sea trade, ports and harbors, tourism, mining, pharmaceuticals in the ocean space, and fisheries, recreational, social, and cultural heritage. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Makisov. I think we can now allow for questions and clarifications. I recognize Mrs. Mabuza, Mr. Morgan, and Mrs. Lovemore, Mr. Kosana, in that order.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, I just want to raise a concern. Year in, year out, we are presented with strategic plans. But GG, we never get a feedback of your achievements and your failures of the last strategic plan. Year in, year out, Chairperson, we are told about eradicating alien plants. If you drive from Joburg to Tzaneen, my hometown, from Joburg, you see birds branding alien flower. That is spreading at a very high speed, a purplish flower. In some farms in South Africa, there's Lantana Camara that is killing a lot of animals. And I'm worried about that, Chairperson, because year in and year out, we are told about eradicating those alien plants. Chairperson, I would also like to get a briefing on how many staff members have been relocated to the Department of Agriculture. Because fisheries is now with agriculture. And Chairperson, I would also like to know if in the department there are open posts, or if there were open posts, are those open posts transferred to the Department of Agriculture? Because if I'm not mistaken, there are about 19 posts in different units, 19 in different units, to say what is happening about those posts. Lastly, Dadimaikiso. I know Dadimaikiso from 1994. I was not expecting you to present your presentation based on the British. I wanted you to be specific on South African models. Say, what are you doing as South Africa? Because everything that you were presenting here was saying, this is from a British model, and I was not expecting you. I was expecting you to give us a South African scenario, and I'm no longer expecting you to present you from paper. These things are in your obligato, if I'm correct, to say you know some of these things in and out.
And also on the chapter, let me not be selfish. I'll come back.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the presenters. Thank you, DG, for setting Esther out at the start. I've got a couple of things. Just a comment to the DG of Environment, Quality and Protection. It is sad, of course, that we haven't got an MPRDA commencement. And I won't especially comment on it. The word I get from inside the department is that they have no intention ever of commencing that act, and that it will be amended before it comes back to, before it even gets commenced. So there's considerable upheaval there. So we're not going anywhere there. It's still on the subject of mining. Yes, I hope there's an SEA for Mapungubwe. But wasn't there supposed to be an SEA for Mpumalanga as well, or at least an EMS? And can you give us a report on that? Because as far as I know, it had a component, obviously, to decide, you know, what is sensitive, where is sensitive, what's not sensitive, where you can mine and where you can't mine. I am interested to know on that topic of Mapungubwe, whether indeed you commented under cooperative government on the Coal of Africa mining application. Because I'm very sympathetic to the fact that you can't stop it under existing legislation. But, I mean, do you provide comments? Because you'll know that the minister said she was surprised on Friday. But did you actually express your concern? And which entity, not just DEET, but, you know, Sandfox and the rest? Now, with regards to GMOs, you said you kind of comment on these applications. I can't remember the exact amendment, but when we worked on that amendment act, which amended simultaneously four acts last year, biodiversity, air quality, there was some stuff on GMOs as well. And aren't GMO applications now supposed to trigger a full EIA? Syngenta are putting in an application for a new type of GM maize at the moment. And it is surely the first opportunity to do a full EIA. Elephant management. Always worth putting officials on the spot. How far are we away from making decisions on whether to cull or not to cull? And I'll just keep it simple because I know what the answer is. Well, we have to wait for the elephant management plan in each area. But let's say the Kruger Park. Okay. Worth asking this question each year. Lion bone exports. This department has made great strides, Chairperson, in trying to cut down on canned lion hunting and have put in regulations that certainly make it much harder. I'm well aware of the court case. But the new phenomenon now, Chairperson, is the export of lion bone, where actually lions now have new economic value. They don't have to be hunted. You can merely kill them and export their bones. It's happening from the Free State province at the moment. There are over 2,000 lions in captivity whose economic value is threatened by the clampdown on canned lion hunting. So I'm interested to know whether it's on your agenda as a biodiversity branch and what's your opinion on it, because it is arguably as cruel and humane as canned hunting. To kill a lion for its bones for export. Then, Chair, with regards to the ocean strategy, I mean, it's hard to have a discussion at the start of the year without us ever having had a proper briefing on the transfer of the functions to agriculture. Our colleagues in agriculture got a briefing last week, and we don't have a briefing. I read the proclamation, and so I've got a fair understanding of what I think has happened. But we've been excluded as a committee from this process entirely. So let me give you lay a couple things out. I mean, I'm not personally convinced there's a need for a branch on ocean management at all. That's not to say there shouldn't be any work on the oceans in this department. But actually, I think there's a good case to say, why does it have its own branch and why isn't it under biodiversity, actually? Because the issues that you deal with in your branch are not dissimilar. It's just kind of terrestrial and water, basically. And
So, I mean, that's the debate which perhaps we as MPs weren't entitled to participate in, but I certainly would have liked to participate in. The ocean presentation which Dr. Maiakiso has given us today isn't worthy of a strategic plan. There's nothing there at all. I don't see a case yet for this branch even existing. I'm obviously very keen to know then, from the DG, the number of staff that are going to be allocated to this branch, its funding, and the reason I ask this, and this worries me, Chairperson and Acting Chairperson, Chairperson and the Chair, is if we can't be presented with a strategic plan at the moment for Ocean, how on earth can you allocate a budget for it in the period going forward? It's an absolute thumbsuck at the moment. So as my colleague here says, we've got a few ideas from Britain. It might be fine. Britain might do it well. But we don't have costings. We don't know exactly what the priorities are for this year. We don't know about staff. I mean, all the other ladies and gentlemen here at least can point to KPIs and KPAs for the period going forward. And you attach that to money. And all our colleagues here have said they don't have enough money, which I'm very sympathetic for. None of us can cast opinion on Ocean at the moment. So Chairperson, I feel uneasy about obviously a branch that has been created with no strategic plan and money, and even doubtful whether it should exist on its own. I think there's a strong argument for saying, well, why just put it under biodiversity? Actually, it's not that dissimilar at all. Mr. Will, thank you for your presentation. Just for a comment, I was very heartened to hear President Zuma speak quite comprehensively about climate change in his State of the Nation address. It's the first time in my 6 years in Parliament that the President has dealt with it in a way that wasn't just in one line. So that was good. It does signify a seriousness from the government about it, and I'm very aware of the disappointment of Copenhagen, where we didn't achieve what we wanted to achieve, and can't blame us necessarily for that. There are a lot of factors there. So I think it's an exciting year for climate change, I know that it's one of the issues that I will certainly follow more closely. I don't really have any comments on the specifics there.
Thank
you, Chair. I have a number of questions. There are a number of things that really are very laudable, CG, but also raise questions. I'm thrilled to hear about dedicated court time in the various courts, but that then raises the question, what happened to the dedicated court? The minister last year in her budget speech said that there would be, if I recall correctly, she said within 8 months, there would be the resuscitation of the environmental court. That hasn't happened, so what has happened to that? Water came up over and over again, the deteriorating quality of water resources, and it's something that I spend a lot of my energy on. And I'm interested in the level of your interdepartmental, when I say departmental, between yourself and Department of Water Affairs, of your interaction on the deteriorating quality. You're raising a lot of concern about it. They're sitting with the legislation, and which they can use to implement. Now, we're hearing disturbing things, like, for instance, that there's been a prohibition on any legal action taken against municipalities by officials, which would affect you. Would you get involved and say, no, look, you can't do this? What is the level of interaction? I'm interested on the about the alien invasive species regulations which were mentioned that are coming up this year, and how they compare. Will they take the place of, for instance, the regs in terms of the Conservation of Agricultural Resources Act? Well, I'm not sure if they're regs or the Act, but nevertheless, that's the one part. And then, Chair, something that we really, really struggle with is that the Conservation of Agricultural Resources Act requires private landowners to remove invasive species. It's an enormous burden on farmers, and it's a burden that they simply can't. cannot carry. It is just too expensive. But there is none, little, if any, government. There used to be far more government assistance. Now there's little, if any, government assistance. And I'm interested in your comment on that, particularly in light of the fact that you've got regulations coming up. I'm thrilled to hear about the regional waste facility. I hope it's more than one for healthcare risk waste that you are looking at. And without going into too much detail, this is obviously something that's coming up all over the country. There's a situation in my home city at the moment with Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality where there isn't a healthcare risk waste facility. But as the law stands at the moment, as the Waste Act stands at the moment, nobody has the responsibility of developing one. Nobody has that responsibility. Your department doesn't have that responsibility, and I'm glad you're taking it on, but I actually wonder whether an amendment to the legislation is not necessary. You don't necessarily have to comment on that now, but it certainly is a gap. I'm interested, Chair, about the greening in cities, working with municipalities with open space systems, etc. What does concern me there, and again, I just like your comment, is that it is very operational. And I know certainly we've heard from the Department of Water Affairs that they want to sort of step back from the operational side and become a heavy focus on policy, regulation, etc. And getting involved in planting trees, etc., and developing open space systems is extremely operational. So is that not a danger for you? And my fear is that municipalities will depend on you to take that over, quite frankly. The climate change, I'm just interested in the level of interaction with departments that would play a pivotal role and that don't appear to be, certainly on a parliamentary level, involved, as energy obviously is involved. So your interaction with energy, but then departments like national planning, departments like trade and industry, departments like economic development, because those are the departments that, Chair, climate change, the impacts are environmental. The causes are not. And it's the departments of, for instance, trade and industry that are going to have to take specific issues forward. I know that my colleague, Honourable Morgan, has actually raised parliamentary questions this last week. I have sent emails, etc., trying to find out what are the actual targets that this country has committed to in terms of climate change. The minister has made absolutely no statement subsequent to her meeting in New Delhi. Certainly not that we've seen. And it's strange that this is something that has not been public. So again, a comment on that. What has been submitted to the United Nations? Joanne mentioned that we would come back to the environmental management framework and the map. And the map looks very interesting, but the legends in our document, Chair, are cut off. You can't read the legends. So if we could just have an explanation on what the map means. And I just had a question saying, where is the actual OCM strategic management plan? But I think that's been addressed by my two colleagues. Thank you, Chair.
No problem.
Chairperson, thank you very much for this opportunity. Chairperson, we were discussing a document that seeks to address the five priorities of this country and also trying to speak to the first delivery that we're talking about. We're saying this is a year of delivery, and as we're discussing this document, will be in line of that. Chairperson, on page 12, under goals and strategic objectives, paragraph number 3, financially responsible and accountable organization, giving value for money, that is the goal. Chairperson, I should think here, as a country, we've got the challenges about the municipalities who are given a budget or money for issues related maybe to environment or certain delivery matters, but only to find that the money is not spent according to the request or according to the item that they've requested to from the treasury. How is this department to make sure that is going to guard against that in assisting these municipalities to spend as expected or according to the item that they have requested for? Number two, Chairperson, the involvement of the municipalities in terms of monitoring their projects. How is this department to monitor and make sure that the municipalities are delivering the project, their projects related to this department? Because here, under strategic objective, we said promote equitable and sound cooperative and cooperative governance. When you speak about cooperative governance, I should think the local municipality is part, but must have a way how to implement then this info and disseminate this information to make sure that the municipalities are on board of what you are saying. Another question, Chairperson, is page 14 under education. The role, it says demand-driven environment skills development. How will this Department of Environment implement this on the grassroots, this skills development, this education part of it? If people need a skill, how will this department implement this? And on health issues, we've got industrial areas. What is our strategy in terms of making sure that the industries also are part and parcel of our strategic plan to prevent that air pollution and other matters related to? And Chairperson, the waste management in the rural areas or in the rural municipalities, I should think, is a matter of agency for us as a department to make sure that we assist in this regard. Really, we have got a serious problem of a dumping site. We have got a serious problem of a recycling in those dumping sites. Who's having a right, in fact, to recycle? Because I see in this country, everybody is recycling. Who's having a right and who's licensing these people in order to recycle? And also, Chairperson, I should think, the department is planning to training the municipalities and other structures in relation to the landfill site, I should think we must make sure that this is very urgent. And we must make sure that we implement this, because otherwise we are not going to implement this strategic plan in terms of environmental issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for standing in for me. I this one of mine doesn't have pages are not numbered, but it's under the second program, number 2. And page for balance, the balance four, I guess. But I'm not taking that. I'll just tell you with what does this thing start, because there are no pages here. The priority, key priorities, AQM, air quality management. I got a room kitchen. Are you here? Oh, I'm the best of the world. I know about the football. Yeah, Joanne, you say here under your key priorities, on this page, it's not numbered, but it's under key priorities. You said that you need to support the new licensing authority. If you can just elaborate, what kind of support are you talking about?
maybe some of the issues that we raise here, we will get then clear information at the workshop. If we ask you, what does this mean? Can you elaborate on that thing? If you can just jot that down so that when we get to the workshop, we can jump. And then also there is under proposed EQ and P management for the current department strategic plan, number of waste management facilities applications processed. And then under that, you'll get the implementation phase of plastics, asbestos, and tire regulations. Can you just explain to us this tire regulation? Why I'm asking that, I was approached by one company in the Free State, people who have grouped together, but they are not South Africans. They have come to invest in South Africa. And they wanted to meet with myself and the chairperson of energy, because they said they can use old tires to get diesel out of that. And I said to them, I have so many problems in my department, they must reduce the diesel. It's the last thing that I would like to deal with. But I feel that I need to get back to them and get just the clarity on that. And also one thing to end, you say here the launch of Waste Management Officers Forum at Waste Indaba. Can we get more information about these officers? Maybe even at the workshop, if you can give us that information, Dr. Chairperson. And here you I think Lena Yako that I'm kitchen. On the key challenges for 2011 regulatory services, compliance and enforcement, lack of support from provinces in relation to finalization of inspection reports. Can you clear for us what does this mean? Provinces, who in the province? Are we talking about the municipalities or is it just explained to us here? Yeah? And one thing that Chairperson would like to raise is that all these challenges have been raised. Maybe you should tell us whether you have any strategy in place to try and address all these challenges that you have raised here. Why I'm asking that? As I have said when I spoke here to not people and said that at the end of the day, people think that we are very stupid as members of parliament. Because when local government, I say local government, when they experience some challenges, that is among yourselves and them, they always don't want to take the blame. It has always been thrown back to the department, and then I'm expected to respond. You see? That's why I have such interest on these things, because I have a letter in my office about houses that can't be built because that structure of yours did not come back to them and tell them whether they can go ahead and building those houses. But I don't believe that, but if they say that, I must be convinced that it's not true what they are saying. And on the climate change, I would like to say to us, if we can start now preparing for 2011, because South Africa has got many activities between 2011 and 2012. 2011, we have the local government elections. 2012, we have the 100-year sanitary for the ANC, everything. And you know that, I must say that because we are in government. So as soon as we start with this, better. And secondly, I'm happy to hear that there are some interdepartmental or intergovernmental and ministry that you've put in place to deal with issues of climate change. Parliament also has come up with a proposal to this committee that we must propose to them which committees we think that are supposed to be part of us in order for Parliament to look into the issue of establishing a committee in Parliament that will deal mainly with issues of climate change, whether be it
a committee or a unit or a commission, but something will focus on issues of climate change. So all those issues must be initiated by this committee in order for us then to draw in all these other committees that are supposed to be part of that structure. I think you will assist us as this committee in trying to establish such a structure. And such a structure is expected then to be in place for this 2010-2011 financial year. So what I'm saying is, I think I'm impressed by the presentation on climate change, because it's going to assist us. Chairperson, there is a lot of questions that I would like to ask, but I don't want to bore you. We'll give to other members or even to them to respond on that. And then to DG, maybe DG can explain also on the program that I heard a member saying here agriculture is, fisheries within agriculture. Maybe we should know which part of the program is going to agriculture, and also the resources. Obviously, the resources will follow the program. See which part of that, because we understand that the program is still there, but it has been divided in two at the moment. Yeah, and then maybe we should explain which is with us and which is going to that. But otherwise, I'm happy about this presentation that was made whilst I was here. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, can I add on what you're saying? DG, we are told that 80%.
The chairperson is me.
Oh,
Chairperson, we are told that 80% of what the DG is saying has been transferred to agriculture. And lastly, DG, 2 years, if not 3 years back, your department went to the Eastern Cape, Humbeck, where people are fishing on abalone. And your department made a commitment there, or a promise, that they will send scientists to go and take stock of abalone in that area. Because 133 fisheries lost their licenses. Can we get a briefing on that? Because those people are still waiting for your department to go back to them and inform them on why were those licenses taken from them. Meanwhile, big fisheries, big business people are busy fishing on abalone in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. DG, before you come in, I also have a few questions, but very short. One, you spoke of environmental court in some provinces and first state district court as a pilot. Now, in light of so many poaching cases reported in Mpumalanga last year, didn't you deem it fit to request the Department of Justice to pilot a district court in Mpumalanga? Secondly, I think it's Johan who spoke of the waste task team that would focus on compliance and enforcement. So I just want to know whether will this be at the national level or will it descend to provincial and the local level? Lastly, you spoke of greening the open spaces. So how will this be spread to rural people? Because mostly I see this is being implemented in townships and in towns. But in deep rural areas, we don't see these things happening. Thank you. Yeah, last one.
The last time when you were here, Gigi, when your people were here, I asked them, why do they still refer to themselves as Department of Environmental Affairs? Why not Water and Environmental Affairs? No, it's because it's the committee that I'm chairing. I'm not chairing two different committees here. I'm chairing one committee and two entities or two sectors. But according to us, we don't have a Department of Environmental Affairs. We have a Department of Water and Environmental Affairs. That's what we have here. Unless then you've got something else, then we can challenge that as Parliament, because that's what we know as Parliament.
Thank you, Chair. And also, Mr. Mpegeni,
I thought you would use this opportunity because you are now used to your colleagues and your mother there. So, explain the issue of the Mpumalanga EIA report, which was issued irregularly by the department, because last time you couldn't explain it.
Thanks, yeah. Is it?
Okay, honorable members, thank you very much for those very important and challenging questions. Let me start. I will deal with some responses, and then I will allow my colleagues to handle others. Firstly, honorable member Mabuza, on the issue of achievements on the strategic plan, we presented a report, was it in August, September, to indicate how far were we with the implementation of the strategic plan. We are also compiling an annual report which gets presented to the committee for consideration. So it is therefore that report that you will have an opportunity to discuss. Purely today we're coming to discuss just the strategic plan because one, we only learned last week that we have to table the strategic plan on the 3rd of March. The treasury regulation, normally we would present the table officially, the strategic plan, 7 days before the actual budget vote, 7 or 10 days, I can't recall now. So in light of that pressure, we then met on Thursday, my team, to prepare something and requested a briefing. And we're also informed about the briefing on Thursday, as it was confirmed for today. We had planned that would bring you proper documents once we finalize everything on the 9th and 10th. So this was an emergency meeting, and we're trying to do what is best so that you do not see for the first time a document that has already been officially tabled without having helped us with the direction in terms of what you also understand of the center. So I thought I must just probably clarify them. Then secondly, on the issue of our performance or what then would be the performance in respect to the alien spread or spread of alien species. The program on controlling the spread of alien species is implemented under Water Affairs. Honorable members, through the Working for Water program, not under us, but we coordinate because it's part of an environmental sector program. The Department of Environmental Affairs in the Expanded Public Works program is the coordinator of the Water Affairs program and Agriculture program, and I think it's Arts and Culture program at the time also. They were falling under us. So land care program is coordinated by us also in terms of human reporting, but we don't take responsibility for it. However, I think we agree with you, I would agree with you in terms of, I mean, Alantana Camara is out of hand. And in any event, even all the various other species, whether you're talking water hyacinths in dams or even water systems, and wattle, black wattle, blue gums, pine trees, and so on. Those that are, that are more prevalent on the catchment, they would then have an impact on water resources and also on the biological, biological diversity. But in some instances, they occur in areas which have less environmental sensitivity, like jacaranda trees in the Pretoria city. So because of the limited amount of resources, if we were to eradicate all the alien species, I think Working for Water at the time, I think 5 years ago, they had indicated a number of billions that the state would have to invest in the program. And unfortunately, the level of investment then is also consistent with what can be tackled, hence the prioritization of particular catchments and biodiversity sensitive areas. So I'm giving that response on behalf of Water because I have that sense because we have been coordinating as a department, but they can explain it further during their presentation to the committee. Then the next issue, which links to a question raised by Honorable Morgan and Honorable Lovemore and the Chair in relation to the marine and coastal management. Honorable members, I think, yes, you have not received a presentation because the sequence of events happened at the time when you were no longer sitting. I can say that. Because I think November, December, you did not have another sitting after the decision was made by the president. However, I can then explain what is legally there because the transfer has not happened on the members. The proclamation is saying that it would be effective on the 1st of April, number one. Number two, the proclamation outlines what is environmental function versus what is fisheries function and the support that goes with the fisheries function. If you recall, in the previous year when we presented to you, we said the advice or scientific advice that was provided is that the system is integrated. It is not advisable to split it. But then a decision was made that the fisheries function must then be separate as an economic activity, and therefore we've tried to then, or in our inputs in the proclamation, they were informed by that. So in essence, in terms of that proclamation, the split therefore in principle is, in terms of the national macro restructuring organization of the state, which is the guidelines given by GPSA, the NMOS guidelines. You're talking about a split of 80% to 20%, 20% being environment, 80% of the functions going to agriculture. Research that supports that, enforcement that supports that, and the other corporate affairs, including the financial management side, because the fund, the Marine Living Resources Fund, is also then going to move to agriculture. So in theory, we're talking about an establishment of about, Isham just wrote the numbers, but I don't quite, I'm not sure because he had to leave, unfortunately, with Legal Services Chief Director, because I thought they would deal with this item. They had to go and deal with the appeals on environmental authorization, which was starting at 11:30. So, it's about 1,700 people in MCM, and then more or less 600 would go to agriculture and 200 more or less, or 100 and something would remain with the environment, depending also, because when you do the split, the guideline is that first you do the formula, you apply the formula, then you get to functionality, and if functionality then is of this, in essence saying this post should be going to agriculture or this should be going to environment, then those are the considerations that would have to be made at that point. So we have not gone into that process as yet. And then secondly, in terms of the vacancies, because I'm also talking from the experience that I've had with the tourism transfer process, vacancies, if they are funded vacancies, yes, they can be transferred, but if they are not funded, our establishment, as I indicated and I've indicated previously, has never been 100% funded. Even with tourism, we had to put aside the posts that are not funded, and we dealt with the posts that are funded. Then you apply the split and the formula on that basis. So vacant posts that are not funded will not go to agriculture, nor will they come to environment. They are non-existent in essence. So during the split process, that would be then the application. And then lastly, I think I also have to indicate that we have been told to hold a bit because Minister of Agriculture, I don't know, there is still negotiation. But the legal arrangement is that there is the proclamation, but we understand that there is a call for the whole function with the environment and component to go to agriculture. I don't know whether that is going to be the final thing or not. So at this point in time, I don't want to continue to be accused for implementing decisions of the presidency and in light of maybe other political processes that are perhaps still underway. So in that case, I cannot confirm who are those people and which polls are going at this point in time. Lastly, coming then to the issue of Dr. Mayekiso. Dr. Mayekiso is an employee of the department. The presentation is not a branch presentation. And we have programs. The programs, the way they worked out the programs, the CFO and the CFOs of agriculture and the other technical people and the MCFO were called to meet in, sometime in January. On the basis of that link to the proclamation, what then is, should be vested in funds, thanks, in by treasury to agriculture in terms of the economic classification. What then was vested is the 80% for posts in terms of funds. That money will be available as from the 1st of April in agriculture. 20% is what we would have to remain with. And we will only be able to pay the 20% of the people that would remain. Secondly, Dr. Mayekiso, the branch then, it's not Dr. Mayekiso now, let me talk the branch before I talk the person. The branch would then remain with the function. Integrated Coastal Management Act is not in that proclamation. It has to be implemented. Razina's chief directorate is what is put in that program. It's not Dr. Mayekiso, it's that those activities that would be included in the integrated coastal management, and also and the ENE is also, or the economic classification of treasure reflects that, and the Antarctica and Island program. So those are the things that are involved in that program. So he is not presenting a strategy for a branch. What he is presenting is what we've outlined, the minister in his head discretion of redeploying Dr. Mayekiso within the department because of various issues, both that were affecting her personally and also the progress in terms of MCM, which in terms of what we have on record, Dr. Mayekiso has not broken any law. He then got an agreement with the department through the minister approving that. He then gets redeployed. So he is redeployed, and part of the work that he does would be what that strategy is. In the organization, 3 years ago, we've had in our third plan several times a discussion on how we approach marine biodiversity and the linkage to climate change, the linkage to coastal development, and this is then what that work that he is undertaking. As an initial basis for his responsibilities. So in essence, there is not a level of creation of work for him, possibly I can say that, but it's also a gap that we've had in the organization. And we have a scientist that is qualified to assist us currently. And there will be debates and engagements. We started an engagement with Sanbi around how exactly we're going to collaborate in this area, including Fundi's branch. But Fundi has insisted in the past that in his own performance agreement, there was never a key performance area on marine biodiversity. We'll be changing his own conditions of service, and we have not been able to do that. For now, we have then Dr. Mayekiso fulfilling those responsibilities. Then coming to the other questions by the Honourable Member Morgan on the MTRDA, I think Joanne will come back. It's a concern that we registered also in our presentation. And yes, the EMF for waterbed is something that is being pursued, and Joanne can provide further details on that. Honourable Lovemore, on the dedicated court time versus environmental courts or specialized courts. In the negotiations, because again, this is not a mandate of environmental affairs, the courts are run by justice. In our negotiations with justice, the minister and the officials, and we understood that, and that was the agreement, that there is not money, and especially in light of the current financial situation, we are unable to have dedicated resources for a court, and we cannot also confirm that the demand for those courts is going to be long in the long term sustainable. So we have to start on the basis of piloting, and therefore we have to use what is existing in terms of infrastructure, so that we do not have to pay. We have to get the prosecutors that are already in the system and help them through the training manual that QP branch, Joanne's branch, has developed in consultation with the Justice College, get them training that is linked to environmental crime prosecution, and also even a bench training manual, a bench book of sorts that we still have to develop. So we've agreed on those, and the process, and the ministers have got that understanding and an agreement, therefore. So this is why we are no longer talking environmental courts, per se. And then the honourable member linked to that, I can't remember whether it was honourable Mateve, you asked about Mpumalanga district.
Yes.
We rely on the data also that Justice had in front of them, and in comparison to pressures where provinces that had the highest number of court environmental crimes. It was Gauteng, it was KZN, Western Cape, and Free State. And basically also depending on the nature of the crimes. The Western Cape, it was informed for more by abalone and poaching at sea and all, which is still going to be something that will confront agriculture, and we still have an interest in that matter. So it is not to say that Mpumalanga is not important. It's important, but in relation to the bigger scale of things, they had to consider a foresight, and we would then still find ways of working in those other provinces. And as things emerge, after a year, they are going to meet and then again confirm whether we should roll it out further to the other districts or even regions. Then, lastly, I'm going to, before I give over to my colleagues, on the municipal support on skills development, because Ishan is not here, and expenditure on municipalities for some of the initiatives that we spoke about, on whether it's greening and waste management. I think what we have been confronted with, honourable members, as a department is, one, we've analysed IDPs of municipalities. We've analysed to a certain extent the staff and the capacity of local government to implement and provide environmental services or even environmental functions. And they are almost non-existent in most of the districts, except the cities and and some of the other towns that are not quite cities, but who have some capacity and have some revenue base in terms of municipal revenue collection. So we then said to Treasury, because they are giving us funds to use for labor-intensive work in our area, we rather use those funds to then support those municipalities to get the interventions that would at least make them first appreciate the function. So it's part of awareness and educating, but also at the same time plan to then sustain and continue the services where it is possible. So it's an area where we look at skills development. In some areas, we are appointing people to be placed in municipalities, and we're hoping that after a period of 3 years, those people can then be end up being officials of the municipality. So these are the interventions in terms of how we support a local government. And lastly, I think there is a danger, Honourable Lazmo, of blurring lines in terms of constitutional responsibility. We are not supposed to be in intimidation. local government, purely, especially waste management, they've got a responsibility there, even on air quality management. And however, I mean, the presidency, even now, as DGs, we have been told to marching orders, that we are expected to be in action. The president is not even wanting a DG that does not know what happened in a town or rural area somewhere in the country. So we have been called to action. We have to find mechanisms to do that smartly without necessarily taking over responsibilities of local government. And those are the areas where we try and reach agreements with local government on how we then pursue the priorities that we share with them, whether it's in the area of waste management, greening, and air quality management, and so on and so on. So, for instance, we would like to have, in terms of the Waste Act, waste management officers in all the municipalities. And it might end up that we would have to prioritize that and then agree with Treasury that those funds in the long run, we suspend them to the municipality so that they can continue providing that service, because it's in our interest that that service is provided. Lastly, I think I am actually done with I'm done. Can I then give to Joanne and then Fundi?
Okay, thank you, DG. Thank you for the questions, honourable members. Could I just ask that you put up the last slide of the EQP presentation, which has got the map of the EMFs, because I think we can then look at that. Okay, I'm going to go from the beginning. On the Coal of Africa, we did comment to the DME on the application. We opposed it. We raised the issues of the cultural and archaeological significance of Mapungubwe. We raised the issue of the World Heritage Site status and the impact of that kind of a development on the World Heritage site, the potential impacts. We raised the environmental impacts. We raised the fact that because that area has not been thoroughly explored as an archaeological site, if you put a coal mine there and blast, you're potentially blasting ancient graves and a whole lot of heritage resources. And then we raised a set of issues around the impact on water and the fact that in the long run, they're actually the jobs in this Coal of Africa are 600 highly skilled jobs. And there's very the bulk of those jobs aren't actually going to come from the local population. So we raised a very large series of issues, and the surprise has got to do with the fact that we were not formally informed in writing of the decision, but we discovered it because a journalist phoned and asked us to comment. So that is Coal of Africa. If you look at that map, those are the EMFs that are planned, underway, and concluded in the country. And there's a whole series that are planned in the Mpumalanga High Fault. We are not doing an EMF for the Mpumalanga High Fault as a whole. There's been discussions with the Mpumalanga province, and the EMF that's being done is around the Vakkerstroom area. But if you look at it, there are plans to roll them out in other areas. Basically, it's as funds become available and in relation to the sensitivity and priority that is achieved. And sometimes the provinces have money and sometimes we do, but we work collaboratively on them. From national, we kind of funding every year, we fund more of that work. In terms of then a regional waste facility, basically it is the issue of medical, you're quite right, there isn't any legal stipulation saying government or the private sector or anyone else must develop healthcare risk waste facilities. At this point in time, they are largely developed by the private sector, but there are very major problems essentially in the cost structure of the industry. I mean, I think that is the root. For me, I'm beginning to think that the root of this problem is that everybody is trying to undercut each other in an industry that actually has high costs and as a result of that, what you're getting is a sub-economic result because of that. Because in fact, people are offering their service at prices that mean they can't recover their costs, and so all the way along that value chain, you're getting seriously bad practices happening. The idea of a PPP and what we're suggesting is a feasibility. We're going to go to National Treasury and ask them to assist us in doing all of the studies that would then determine whether one or more regional facilities could be built. And in the same way as you're getting PPPs around hospitals, it would mean we would go into a long-term agreement with the private sector and try and really build a facility that could meet the environmental and health requirements, but at the same time carry on providing a reasonable service. I think that's what we need to do as a country. If that is not the solution, we're going to have to basically go back to the drawing board because, as I said, I think we are faced with a very serious situation at the moment. The issue that was raised around licensing of recycling, we don't license particular enterprises to undertake recycling, but if you want to run a recycling operation, depending on the size of it, you need to get a license. If it's in relation to general waste, it should be from the province, and if it's hazardous waste, it needs to be from the national department. So that is how the system works. So the onus is on the people who operate the recycling facility or the transfer station to come to us and apply for a license. And I think that there are many of the recyclers actually have. There are some problems, particularly I think with people who are running very dirty operations. I mean, where stuff is lying, blowing around and flying into the roads and into the water systems. On rural waste management, I think the issue that the DG referred to and that I referred to is the fact that we've identified the fact that even where there are people in municipalities across the country, they don't necessarily have the skill to do the job. The example is we recently, at the end of last year, went in and my chief director and director spent personally weeks and weeks in Mthatha working with the people running the landfill site there to turn it into a reasonable landfill site, including teaching them how not to let fires happen, how to get the animals and the people off the landfill site, fencing the site, putting a cover on the site, and helping them to work out a program that would enable that site to be run properly. Now, I mean, we can't do it all around the country. We don't have the resources. But what we have agreed that we're going to do is to try and transfer that level of skill. I mean, it's very basic planning and operational skill to the people who are running waste sites in rural and in urban areas in order that we can ensure that at a basic level there's a better set of management. And it's quite simple things that need to be done to maintain that, so that's the training program that we want to put in place this year, and our feedback is as if the municipalities would welcome that. In terms of the issue of the licensing authority, there we're talking about the fact that in terms of the Air Quality Act, municipalities are the licensing authorities. That's in terms of the Constitution, and the Air Quality Act in its entirety is intended to come into effect on the 1st of April. We've been doing a phased bringing of it into effect, and the last phase is in April this year, and then the licensing function goes over to municipalities. Now, we've worked for the last 3 years with municipalities and with provinces around the transfer and the capacity building and the training and the development of the systems, and our staff at a national level instead of doing the licensing are going to support the air quality officers in provinces and in municipalities to actually carry out that function. So we will issue also guidelines and provide support and, if necessarily, review and provide technical expertise in relation to the licensing of those facilities. In terms of asbestos, plastic, and the tire regulations, we can go into that in detail, but the plastic, in terms of plastic, there are regulations. Asbestos, we passed regulations at the beginning of last year around the phase out of asbestos and the management of asbestos waste, and there's been an implementation process which we can report on. Tire regulations are recently new. What they essentially provide for is they determine under what conditions a tire becomes a waste tire. What you then have is the fact that the tire industry, there's an organization that was formed called the South African Tires Recycling Association, and they are working with the industry to try and work out how that set of tires can then be used. At this point in time, I think the big use for those tires is going to be the cement industry, who want to use waste tires, shredded waste tires, for their kilns to as a fuel source for the kilns, but there are also all kinds of other proposals, including this diesel process. I mean, and there are many different uses for waste tires, including using them for road surfacing, freezing them, using them for diesel, using them to burn a wide range of sources. So I think we're going to see a lot more development around what can happen with waste tires. I think there's an ongoing supply, but I think the first thing that we're going to deal with is there are also people who've been stockpiling tires for years and who are going to now start strategically releasing them, which is another issue. Then the issue, the lack of provincial support around inspection reports, is many of our compliance initiatives, including the waste one, are done. It's national, provincial, and municipal government working together. Now, when you go into a place and you inspect, everybody then needs to, especially if you're going to take an enforcement action, needs to provide a report in detail of their findings. And in some of the provinces, we've had people who've gone along and have taken responsibility, but they haven't had the capacity at various levels in order to get their information back to us, which means you can't really then conclude your action. So I think that is an ongoing, it's a capacity issue, and it's a numbers of people issue. It's also the fact that in some of the provinces, people who've come with on inspections, EMIs, then leave. And it's also an issue about organizational capacity, because then people go, but there aren't records sitting in the organization necessarily. So it's a challenge that we need to overcome and not trying to find ways to deal with. Just on climate change, Alf will talk about the listing bit. We coordinate through, we have an intergovernmental committee on climate change and a national committee on climate change. And in the intergovernmental committee, I think there are probably about 20 government departments that come in and out. So it's agriculture, it's health, it's water, it is transport, trade and industry, energy, economic development. We've agreed that when the Planning Commission gets up and running, they will participate. So it's a very wide range of departments. And we also then report into both the infrastructure, three clusters, what has been the infrastructure cluster, what has been the economic cluster, and what has been the international relations cluster. And with a new system around these outcomes, we'll then look at where we feed in. It'll be primarily located with the environment and heritage outcome, which is outcome 10, but I think that we will use that infrastructure to carry on doing that work. So I think that fundamentally, and as we move forward into the policy process this year, the idea would be that we use that forum as the base and the coordinating center for actually engaging and managing the policy debate that we have. Treasury is the other department that is involved. So we'll run the policy process in itself as an intergovernmental process. And involve both provinces and municipalities as well. So we're intending to run the second half of the year, quite a big process. I think that in the workshop, we'll talk in more detail about how we see the roadmap moving forward. Then finally, honourable members, let me deal with the issue of Mpumalanga and the EIA issue around the Sandwell Road. Essentially, what happened is that SANRAL put in an application for that road and produced a map, and the map did show that it went through, that it would cut through a part of the botanical garden. SANRAL did write a letter to Sandy and consult with stand be around the issue. But what they didn't do was before they began to construct that road or in the process at an early stage, they didn't apply. They didn't initiate the process of the deed proclamation. Now, when you issue an EIA authorization, what you say very clearly in that authorization is that this authorization does not remove the need for compliance with any other legislation. So if part of what you've got to do legally is to have an area deed proclaimed, or if you have to get a water license, or if you have to get a change in land use, all of that, getting an EIA authorization does not remove the necessity for any of those things to happen. And if any of those then say no, you have a problem that you have to resolve. So our advice is comply with all the legislation, and the EIA then is yet another part of the regulatory process. So where, as I understand it, the problem came in is not that it was a hidden thing, but the fact is that it was not done at the correct point in the process, which was right at the beginning. My, I'm not in a position to answer for Sandra about why, but I suspect that it's because the building of this road was something that I think is linked into getting the road completed by 2010, and I think in that process you had time frames got very, very concertinaed. So essentially I think that really to explain that that is where the problem came in. Essentially, if we'd been working under normal conditions, I think what should have happened is we should have come to Parliament, said there's an intention to build the road. In order to build the road, one would need to de-proclaim this part of the botanical gardens, get the deed proclamation done, and then carry on, have the other process running. And that is not, that it didn't happen in that way. So just to clarify the situation, I think we also do need to be clear that our understanding is that part that was excised is not an environmentally sensitive part of the botanical gardens. The botanical gardens in that area was originally a farm, and it sort of backs onto both the provincial government complex as well as a mall. But nevertheless, the fact is that there was a procedural problem in relation to that authorization. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. On the question that you touched on alien and invasive plants, just to add, why was it reflected there, Honorable Mabuza? We are developing regulations to streamline some of these issues and also to assign some responsibilities. If one reads those regulations, you will see that there has to be a plan in place, there has to be a strategy in place, there has to be penalties there has to be some form of incentives and disincentives. Therefore, once those regulations are in place, whenever a landowner has got, or even a municipality, they are forced to do something about alien plants. Therefore, we hope if regulations are implemented properly, those plants you see on the side of the aliens, they will be falling within a municipality. Therefore, in terms of those regulations, a municipality will have to take an action, whilst broadly government is still investing in removing some of the aliens. On the issue of GMOs and the amendment, we still assess and comment on the GMO applications in terms of the GMO Act. At the same time, we have developed a risk assessment framework, which was included in that amendment. Therefore, when people are applying, they consider our risk assessment framework. That's point number one. The second point, the amendment was more to clarify the whole issue of if required. Therefore, when we do the assessment, we also look at the provision of the National Environment Management Act and also the Biodiversity Act. The issue of culling or not culling, on elephants, the government has not pronounced whether culling or not culling. The way it was done during the norms and standards was to put all of those options in the norms and standards.
Therefore, we are just waiting for any entity, as long as they can prove to us that the culling is a management option. Therefore, they will come. We'll have to approve that. The modeling that is happening on elephant sites now, I think is inevitable. We just received a report on some of the research which is carried out in Adwa Elephant National Park. It is clear in those reports that elephants are impacting negatively on plants, insects, water, on many things that we should consult, we consider in terms of managing healthy ecosystem. Therefore, it is inevitable. Soon, there will be culling in South Africa. Again, it depends on the impact of rabbits. I know because Robben Island, it is a World Heritage Site, UNESCO and the global community and even nationally are concerned about the rabbits. But as we speak, they are culling Robben Island. They are reducing the numbers to an acceptable number. Therefore, my view is that if they cause impact on biodiversity, an appropriate intervention should be considered. On the lion bones, Honorable Morgan, we were caught by surprise about the cervical bone. Unfortunately, if you look at CITES regulations, you can trade on a species or any part of the species. Therefore, there's nothing stopping the traders to trade on bones, which is a thing that now we're caught by surprise, but legally, they can trade on any part of a CITES listed species. Therefore, we know the welfare concerns, but it's a thing that we might want to handle with provinces when we meet them around sensitivities and the image of the country. Honorable Lovemore, on the issue of alien invasive species and CARA, when we're developing these species, we engage agriculture. We wanted to do one list and one set of regulations, and we realized that we can't because mandates are slightly differ. The Conservation of Agricultural Resources Act is looking more on the impact on agricultural resources. Therefore, they will list only certain species. Whilst we in environment, we look at impact on broader biodiversity. Therefore, we had to develop two lists and two sets of regulations. But we agreed on cooperative governance. One example, on the ports of entry, agriculture, they already have officials doing the checking. Once our regulation is in place, given the limited capacity and the limited job budget, we might want to devise some means. One would think of even training some of the agricultural officers and officers from Home Affairs to be able to check the biodiversity introductions when they check IDs and check other agricultural challenges. The burden on land owners with regard to CARA, there will be a burden even on alien invasive species because the requirement that once the government has done the initial clearing, the landowner must do the follow-up. There's also some consideration of some incentives of which is at initial stages. We cannot say what incentives will be in place to incentivize people to clear things like tax rebates. It's a complex process for me. On the greening, we are not interfering on operational issues. What is our concern is the type of trees to be planted to green a municipality or a city. Therefore, the issue of habitat suitability of the trees or plants is a concern for us. We don't want the situation whereby they ended up planting alien plants that we want to remove. That's why we want to give that guidance. And also on the design. I think I've covered most of them that were
The last one is, honourable members, without wasting your time, the honourable chair was asking us a question about the department, that this committee is a committee of water and environment. However, members, the departments are two. You have a Department of Environmental Affairs, which has got a vote of its own, and it's appropriated by Parliament already. The proclamation by Treasury presented different votes. There is a vote for water, there is a vote for environmental affairs. So this committee will deal with two departments under one ministry, in our understanding. But Chair can correct me there. And then the last one...
No, don't be intimidated.
Yeah, yes. No, no, she's going to guide us, because that's how we understand it from a technical point of view, that legally we have a department that's running, because the departments are informed, are established legally also on the basis of the vote that they have identified for them. And then in terms of the other question around the interdepartmental coordination between water affairs and environment, especially on enforcement and compliance issues. We, in terms of that, the amendment that went to Parliament on NEMA enforcement, there was a provision for the Water Act being recognized as a FEMA and Special Environmental Management Act, which therefore allows the minister to then designate the environment, the water enforcers as environmental inspectors or whatever terminology that they want to use. We also have been working with them even on this issue of the courts. We went together with them on to justice. But of course, we are not at the same level. The Environmental Affairs Department has been running the inspectorate, and I think in water affairs there was still an issue about the buy-in and understanding of what exactly this means and how they can work together with us. And the minister has encouraged that we should have that that level of cooperation. And then the Avalon Rights question by Honorable Mabuza, I am not aware of that case, and I don't know whether Dr. Mayekison can respond to it, or else we would have to investigate and give you a response later on.
We'll then finalize honourable members. Thanks, DG. I see we still have, I've just spoken to Chairperson Munch. You know, when we book a venue for Parliament, we can't exceed 3 hours. Actually, we can't exceed 2.5 hours. And I see we still have 1, 2, 3, 4 presentations. Is it true? Yeah, now I think. After, if that might be the last one, we'll take educational awareness strategy and deal with that one and questions and everything. And then those outstanding, we'll take them to the workshop. We'll deal with them at the workshop, because unfortunately the venue is booked for another meeting at 1 o'clock. And secondly, let me respond to what you've said. It's your own understanding. My understanding as Parliament is what I'm telling you. I used to chair a committee which had 2 votes. That was a department subs and independent complaints directorate. Both had 2 different DGs. They reported.